it as stress. And once, and that was a joke, as if in a political office you're going to have a quiet time, but just knowing it was stress, I'm pretty good at self-control. Whenever it has happened since then, I've thought, I'm stressed. I just spend a couple of minutes slowing myself down, and I can just see all the letters go back into place, and it works. So it's only happened once or twice since then. So when you know what the symptoms are, you know what the cause is, you can fix the symptoms yourself. So I stayed on.
Were you able to look after your health during your working
life? I'm a healthy person anyway.
You seem healthy and fit, but I'm wondering, did you have any, would you go to a gym or go swimming or anything like
Never
that?
Never been to a gym in my life. Oh. That's where all the young skinny people go. I walk. And those days, I used to walk every night when I got home, no matter what the time.
Okay.
And I've got my routine. I've got a walk that's 35 minutes, or one that's 45, or one that's about an hour. And then I've got one that's around the lake that's 2 hours.
Mm.
And depending on the time I've got and the time of day, the 35-minute one is the short one that's in on lighted streets. So if I'm walking at midnight, at least there are lights.
Mm.
Yeah. And I've since the 01 election, when I got a treadmill, I bought a treadmill for home. So I don't walk outside as much, but walking outside is as good as for clearing your brain as everything else. Yeah.
So when you left Warren Truss, what happened then?
Well, I can still see it. The January of 2004... I was down the coast at a wedding of a Labor person. I was the only Tory there, and they sat me with the only Democrat that was there, and everyone else was Labor people, former Labor staffers, and this is a girl who was Chief of Staff to Graham Richardson, I think. Great girl. I was friends with the media advisor who'd been invited, and so I stayed at the house. And the morning after the wedding breakfast, I went for a walk on the beach without my mobile phone, without my watch. I have absolutely no idea how long I was gone, and just completely chilled out. And I decided then that it's time now. One of the things that I would do, I'd started going to church, funnily enough, a few years before that I'd get confirmed at church, and I would leave my job after the 04 election, whenever it was. So that was kind of a relief, knowing that was going to happen. I had no plans other than sleep. Because if you're putting your all into it, you really don't have a lot of time. I was sleeping till midday every Saturday because I was too exhausted to get up.
Yeah.
Okay. And I started to recognise what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And so just decided to leave without... without any plans. But it's nice, the people along the way who I'd had the biggest arguments with, like the wonderful Senator Heffernan, I'd had some big run-ins with him over policy issues, where if the policy advisor is running a certain policy line, you want to do the right thing on policy, you've got to get the politics right as well. Even then, there'll be one or two people who aren't happy. And in one case, Senator Heffernan, he was wrong in this case, but he wouldn't accept that. And he was running a campaign against the minister. And it started to go public. And I think I can talk about this now. Kerry Packer's company was involved. And we were doing the right thing by Kerry Packer's company, but not because it was Kerry Packer's company, because it was the right thing policy-wise, it was the right thing for the country in the process of this policy development for agriculture. And Bill never knew why, what happened. But he was... I actually spoke with people who Bill had been speaking to, putting the other case, and which undermined Bill. He rang me and said, "You want to play hardball, lady? I'm going to play hardball with you." And he got really tough. that was one of the minor ones. Anyway, he started, you know, playing hardball. And then the reception, and a couple of days later, the receptionist called, because this was a public debate in the end. And Bill Heffernan was the one, only one really running, because Labor stayed quiet when the Libs and Nats were fighting. He was the only one running against it. And Kerry Packer was on the phone, asking to speak to the minister. Now, the minister couldn't speak to Kerry Packer because he couldn't then get up in Parliament and say, I've never spoken to Kerry Packer. And he, as I said, he was not doing it because of any allegiance or any favours. He was doing it because this is Warren Truss. It was the absolute right thing to do. The receptionist called me and I said, she said it's Kerry Packer's office. And I said, okay, I'll talk to them. And I said, look, can you please tell Mr. Packer that the minister can't speak to him for political reasons, and I'm sure he'll understand that. Can you please get his assistant to give me a call? Or can I please call his assistant and we'll deal with this? And at that stage, one of the younger policy advisors had been dealing with it. Because it was, you know, getting elevated to Bill Heffernan and everything, I was working with the young advisor, who's now a star up in Townsville, running some huge thing in Townsville. Brilliant young man. So he was involved whenever I was dealing with this stuff as well. So then the call came through and it was Kerry Packer. And I just about passed out on the spot. And young Paul came in, this is a different Paul, came in and I said, it's Kerry Packer, what will I do? I've got to stay calm here. And so I thought, okay, he doesn't want his assistant dealing with this, he's dealing with it himself. So I spoke with the great man. He was amazing, cut through, no rubbish. I said, look, the minister won't speak with you because politically it's just out of the question. We are not doing this as a favour for you. We're doing this because it's the right thing to do. And he said, yes, I appreciate that. What can I do to help? And I said, you need to get your friends or yourself to call Senator Heffernan. Here is his number. And you need to get your Labor friends, and I knew then that Graham Richardson, who was retired, was working for him, to call the Labor people and they'll have their numbers. And I said, just tell them it's not on and just get him off our back and everything will go fine. Never heard another peep from Senator Heffernan. He still doesn't know and he won't know unless he listens to this. That's how we beat him. So there are lots of, you know, there was lots of stuff like that. That's why it wasn't routine. You're dealing with different issues in different ways as they come up, and that's where the Chief of Staff has to be flexible, keep the long-term goal in mind. The minister, you've got to do it for the minister. You've got to do it for the right policy and for the government, so you're keeping his colleagues informed and up to date, but also hosing them down when they're not happy. Although I have to say Warren was very good at doing that. I didn't have to do that very often. And deal with issues as they come up.
And you said that you had that walk along the beach. You didn't have any plans as to what you wanted to do next.
Yeah, so I just quit.
So you quit, and then is that when you ended up in the current job that you're in?
It was. This, I had a real think about, as you can do when you've got time out, time to think about what you are capable of and what you like to do. And I always have a plan B because I don't set my heart on plan A just in case it doesn't work. Yeah. There had been a couple of possibilities, like somebody gave me, I was setting up at home as a consultant, a government relations consultant, just in case I didn't find work. But I wasn't interested in working at the time. But I had time to go and, you know, look at different computers, look at different systems, look at desks, set up with a desk, get your chair. There was time to do that. And being new to it, I had time to research what sort of a computer I wanted, whether I wanted, a laptop or a hard, PC. And somebody decided to give me a client. I didn't want a client. But these particular people, This is where I learned I was going to be too honest to be a consultant, though. These guys rang up and said someone had said they needed to talk to me, and they told me what their situation was. They had wanted money from the government. They were in a marginal seat, that a National Party seat that might have fallen in the 04 election. They decided that they didn't want to be political, so they didn't make a noise during the election campaign or before the election. And so now they wanted to go to government and get some money. And when I looked at their situation, they were actually going to proceed with what they wanted to do, with or without the money, but they still wanted the government grant because a competitor had got the grant. And I said, you're not going to get it. You can make as much noise as you want. The election's over. The time to do it was before the election. Who told you not to do it then? They were crazy. Oh, well, we still want to try. So, okay. So I organised meetings with the minister, junior minister, the opposition. I did them a little plan of action and everything. We went to talk to them. So I told them the code is, if the minister says, have you looked at another portfolio, that basically means get lost, you're not getting it from me. But he'll say it really politely and you'll think he cares. And so all that sort of stuff. And that's exactly what happened. So they went away and then they said, no, we want to have another go. So I gave it another go through another means. And I said, the only other way is through government programs, and that's an administrative thing. I don't do the administrative thing, I'll do the political stuff. But I've got a girlfriend, another friend who had left her job at the same time, and that's the sort of thing she was doing. So I gave it to her. I said, look, we'll do it together for a while, but she'll probably take over. So I left it with her and she came up with the same view. And then I found out 12 months later that they had then been, somebody I know had recommended them to go to another lobbyist who was just taking money and and they were going along to meeting after meeting and getting nowhere, but the lobbyist was taking money. So that's what puts me off lobbying. But I knew that if I didn't get a job in an industry association, which is, I thought, would be a good thing to do, that's what I would have to do. And I'd made that decision. I didn't want to go to a large company because I wasn't confident enough, which might seem strange now. I think I could do it now, but I wasn't confident enough to deal with the internal politics in a large company. Politics in politics is in your face and it's nasty. Politics in a large company is a different type of politics, and I've seen friends not cope with it, and I didn't want to give that one a go.
Well, what's the name of the current
group that you job to? Is Australian Pipeline Industry Association. It's the gas transmission industry, and I couldn't have been luckier in the sense that the membership is the owners and operators of infrastructure. So there's the four main big companies, and they're the ones who need to lobby government on economic policy. And then there's another 460 members who are involved in construction, design, operations, and service providers, even the guys who provide the tents and the outback and the four-wheel drive hire. They're all members. So the lobbying part of what I do is 10 to 20% of my workload. The other part is providing the services that the membership needs and being responsive to the membership. So I'm very grateful for that because they're good. They do, as the private sector does, get sucked in a fair bit by or overawed by Parliament House and government and wanting to see the minister. The board and our owners group seem to accept the fact that our policy issues are best dealt with in the bureaucracy, and we work very well through the realms, the bowels of the bureaucracy, in making sure that the policy is actually right for us, so that when it goes to the minister, there isn't a problem for us.
Mm-hmm.
The downside of that is a year or so ago we had, because you still need to have your meeting with the ministers to remind them you exist and all that sort of stuff. It's just a courtesy call from my perspective. The board complained that I didn't have anything to complain about to the minister. And then I realised, I think I need to sell this a little bit better to the board. So, and we're so, so lucky. Martin Ferguson is our minister. And I tell you what, if there was a Martin Ferguson fan club, I'd be the chair.
Sure.
He is just that good. He gets it. He's honest and fair. If you do something wrong, he'll tell you. He's just brilliant. And he knows, you know, that I used to work for Warren, worked for the other side, and we can crack a few jokes about that. But he knows I'm here for the industry, and he's here to get good policy done. And, you know, we don't need to get political because we want to get good policy done. And he's good for that. He's just great. Understands the industry really well. And so the next time that we had a board meeting with the minister, I actually gave the board some speaking notes to talk to the minister. But it's just amazing. These guys who run major companies, they're just quiet when they see the minister. They're quite scared. We gave them the list and said, okay, this is what we can tell the minister we're doing to make his job easier. And these are all the things we're working on that are under control because we're working on them. We've got a policy advisor now, which we didn't have when I started, which helps a lot. So the minister will know that we're doing lots and lots of work, but he doesn't have to step in and stand, you know, sort of make a noise for us. The nice thing about that was Martin Ferguson is smart enough to know what I would know that that's why I needed to do that. He's smart enough to know that the board needs to be reinforced, that things are under control and working well. And he was just perfect. Yeah, so the board was happy. He was happy. We're getting on with the job. So that's really good. Then the other part of the job is safety, as in maintenance. So there's committees that organise things, and we do 25 functions a year. So I'm out of town introducing speakers at lunches and dinners nearly every week.
There's a couple more questions from that list that I sent you prior to the interview. And there's certainly, if you have other comments you want to make at the end of the interview, that's fine too. But I'd like to proceed now to ask about the relationship between the media and the Parliament. You've been in Old Parliament House and New Parliament House. How do you perceive the change? I'm assuming it has changed.
It's so different. It's very, very different. I think I mentioned there's only one other person who's worked in both the gallery and in the government, in the Old Parliament and New Parliament. That's Barry Cassidy at the ABC. Old Parliament House, one of my jobs when I was at radio was break stories. The senior guy did the analysis and major reporting. The junior guy did general, you know, press releases, general interviews, and my job was to run around Parliament House and break stories, find out what was going on. Old Parliament House, you could smell a story. You just knew when something was happening. The building was so small, the offices were so small. I had a few favourite senators that I'd pop in on, and you know, just knock on the door, open it up, and you'd see who they were talking to. Now, it mightn't be a story in that, but you'd file it away so you'd know if you heard something down the track what was going on. You'd see who was talking to who in the corridors. The bar at Old Parliament House was a minefield of stories. And just watching people, you pick things up and knowing the right people to ask. So, it was a great place for getting stories and breaking stories. In fact, I'd moved to Adelaide doing state politics for Channel 9 when the Howard Peacock change happened in 88. And I said then, because they didn't know that the coup was happening, and I said then, it's because it's a new Parliament House. The distance of the media from the politicians is huge. And I think it's improved now, partly because of social media and partly because people are more accustomed to the building. But then they couldn't have had that coup in the old Parliament House. Somebody would have found out. So I suppose they had a coup last year, didn't they, Julia and Rudd? So it's still, you couldn't do it in the old building. So there's that difference. The camaraderie in the old building was different as well because of their working conditions being so bad. Mm-hmm. But media's changed also because of the social media.
Yeah.
And we see new young journalists coming through who are starting to blur the difference between commentary and reporting. Now, that was starting way back when I was a journalist, but it's absolutely rife now. Only a couple of weeks ago, I read in The Australian, it was a full page of a particular issue, and it had the byline stories of the facts of the day. On the comment piece, or it was called analysis, there was no analysis by the journalist. It was just another interview. And, you get all riled up on the day and you want to write to the paper and tell them that they've got it all wrong, and then you think, what can I do? The world's changing. So that was the first time I'd seen it, obviously, in print. Usually you see it the other way around, where in the news story you see some comment thrown in. And like learning it through AAP, in a news story is pure facts. You do not put any comment in there at all. So you've seen that creeping in over the years, but it's just rife now. Whereas one of the young journalists has developed a following in the Twittersphere, and before she was famous, she was tweeting, when she first got to the press gallery, she was tweeting, on my way to a doorstop, going to be an interview with blah. Fine, you know, on the way from this. Not sure what colour shoes to wear to the dinner tonight. Oh, I think Turnbull's an idiot. And just confusing the commentary with, the social commentary from someone in a position like that is actually quite inappropriate. But with the new media, there's nothing we can do about it. So somehow the parties, and I think both parties, are still learning to deal with it.
How do you think it will go? How will this develop?
Who knows? I wonder, maybe, I've been wondering lately, maybe it will overcome this awful situation we have ourselves in now, where the, as we were discussing before, the politicians are too trained in, and the message is too orchestrated and starts to sound false because they're responding to focus groups and wanting to say the right thing. I wonder if the social media is going to open out to bring the general public back in to the discussion. But we also have to remember, I have met people who still think that the social media is bourgeois. That, we don't want anything to do with that stuff, mate.
Yeah.
So they might have a mobile phone and they might text, but they won't have a Facebook page and they won't get involved in anything with the social media. So it's got another step to go before it gets to that level.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's getting there. I've got a Facebook page, but I don't do anything at all related to work on it. And so while I've got some Labor friends and some Liberal friends, and the politicians really waste it. They just use it to announce I'm speaking at such and such a place. They don't use it to generate debate.
Mm.
One day they'll learn to use it to generate debate, because currently when they do it, the only people responding are the party hacks.
Uh-huh.
And they're not getting a debate going. I think that will be something they have to look at. But when I see some of the commentary on Facebook from my friends who aren't the slightest bit interested in politics and some of the things they say about politicians, I really have to restrain myself from actually getting involved in that debate, because I want to stay out of that debate on Facebook and just have it social. But it is helping me to keep in touch with people who aren't interested in politics and don't want to be interested in politics, but they vote, so somehow the parties have to get to them.
Well, Cheryl, in the questions that I sent you, I did point out that we could finish with the question, what does democracy mean to you? This is a question that I ask of not all, but most of the interviewees. Are we ready to talk, to ask that question? What does democracy mean to you?
Well, personally, I know nothing else. Maybe a benign dictatorship is better. Who knows? I don't know that. One of the frustrations that I feel about our democracy, and again, it goes back to the previous discussion, is Australians take it for granted and don't really understand, and that's educated Australia's responsibility to inform uneducated Australia. What we've got is damn good. What we've got is a system where we can say publicly anything we want and generate a debate and not be locked up for it. And I find it frustrating that that message doesn't get out, and the appreciation of what we've got isn't out there. And I would love to be able to make sure that that happens one day. But so far, it's just educated elite talking to themselves.
In finishing off the interview, is there any closing remarks or reflections you'd like to make?
No, only that I'm delighted, and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk my head off.
Well,
it's been lots of fun.
Good, great. Thank you, Cheryl.